Good music is what we want to hear.
What do you mean, good music?
It's what we dance to, what our children will dance to. And if you don't want to play it, then take your records and go home.
Did you have a band? Good or bad?
It's a great band. It's a bad band. It's like pizza, baby. It's good no matter what. There's music in the air.
Welcome to Sound Opinions from Chicago Public Radio and American Public Media. I'm Jim DeRogatis, the pop music critic at the Chicago Sun-Times.
And I'm Greg Kot. I write about rock and roll for the Chicago Tribune. Today on the world's only rock and roll talk show, Jim, I'm feeling a little guilty because we've been hogging the Desert Island Jukebox every week of the show thus far. This week, we're going to share.
Absolutely. Some of the musicians who visited us here in the studio got a chance to pick their favorite songs of all time, or at least the ones they would be stranded with today.
You're listening to Sound Opinions, and time now for some music news.
Listen to me, Mr. DJ, hear what I got to say. If a man is making music, they ought to let his record play.
Cashawana,
Cashawana,
hell of blues. Cashawana,
no matter where I go, I never hear my record on the radio. And it goes like this.
There's a little Neil Young, Payola Blues. That can only mean one thing. We're about to give some news about the Payola situation. But it's good news for once, right, Craig?
Well, it's good news if you're a music fan, I think. We've got sources saying that the four major radio companies are close to an agreement with the Federal Communications Commission, basically admitting that, yes, they have been taking pay-for-play for the last few decades. They're going to pay $12 million in fines because of these offenses. And in addition, they're going to be giving away 8,400 half-hour airtime segments to independent labels, independent musicians, basically the constituency that has been completely shut out of commercial radio for the last three decades.
Only four major companies control all of radio these days. You know, consolidation has made it so that the, Light FM in Orlando is playing the same crap, the Light FM in Chicago and the one in Los Angeles and the one in Dallas. They're all playing the same thing. It's made it easier than ever for the major labels to go one-stop shopping to the one big radio corporation. Here's a little deal. Would you please add Jessica Simpson?
It is an ongoing story. It has been going on for decades. Let's get a little perspective on this. What is different about this than previous payola investigations, previous payola agreements? Let's go to Jenny Toomey, who is the executive director of the Future of Music Coalition, a nonprofit group that addresses legal, technical, and policy issues affecting musicians, and Michael Bracey, the policy director of that organization in Washington, D.C. Welcome to the show, Michael and Jenny.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us, Greg.
Absolutely. And as you both know, Congress and the Federal Communications Commission have been addressing payola for decades now. And there's a sense of, well, how is this any different than any of those other legal initiatives to stamp out payola? Is this, in fact, a major step forward, or is this just same old, payola is just going to find another way to get started again in another few months?
Well, you know, I suspect that there isn't a solution that will ever completely remove the possibility of payola from existing. But what I really like about this settlement is there are theoretically new structures put in place which actually give the public a better chance of paying attention to what's actually happening on the radio. And I think the combination of these new rules, this new oversight, and the internet makes it very, very hard to do illegal things. And so I'm optimistic that this is a really good first step to stamping out payola.
So you think the average music fan who listens to commercial radio on a sort of a casual basis is going to notice a difference?
Well, it's hard to know. You know, what we've really been fighting for, though, is to basically address the fact that in an era of massive radio consolidation, where now 10 companies control roughly two-thirds of advertising dollars and listeners, there really have emerged a whole series of practices that have had the practical effect of essentially barring independent music released at independent labels, from significant airplay. And really what we're hoping to accomplish in this deal and what we're most excited about are the large broadcasting chains voluntarily going forward to the FCC and saying, look, this whole kind of bucket of practices that we've been engaging in, ways that we've been receiving money and consideration from record labels to make their songs eligible for airplay, we're not going to do that anymore. Now, can that be enforced? You know, we're going to have to see how it goes and how it plays, but it's a commitment that we take seriously and we appreciate.
We're talking to Jenny Toomey and Michael Bracey of Future of Music Coalition. I don't know if you guys watched the PBS series that recently aired in several parts where Lowell Bergman examined the state of the media. It was called News Wars. But he made the point that since the FCC kind of losing its teeth over the last 25, 30 years, very slowly, that this idea that the airwaves are supposed to serve the public has been eroding at a ridiculous pace. Are we seeing this as the first sign of the FCC getting some teeth and trying to inject a bit of that community service model back into the airwaves?
I'm not sure that's the case. What you have to recognize is it, with this particular issue with Paola is that the FCC is a very peculiar organization. And the reason we got to this point was that you had one FCC commissioner in particular, who Jonathan Adelstein, who even though he served in the minority, he cares very deeply about the music community. He understands music at a very serious level, and he really has worked for years to raise this issue and to force the commission to do something. That was compounded by the work of Senator Russ Feingold, who, again, was a bulldog and introduced legislation to update the Paola laws and just stayed on the issue. And then finally, you had the Attorney General of New York State, who's now the governor, Eliot Spitzer, actually do a formal investigation and negotiated settlements with major record labels. What happened is that the FCC got put into a box. You know, the leadership maybe didn't want to do much on this issue, but they were forced to because of the set of circumstances, and frankly because the, you know, in an era of open information and transparency, you can't keep these things secret anymore. So I'm not sure that, I mean, we're pleased with the settlement. We're cautiously optimistic that this will help on the margins. We're hopeful that it is going to make a difference if it's fully enforced and serve as a model, but we're going to have to wait and see.
We want to thank Michael Bracey and Jenny Toomey for being on Sound Opinions. Thanks, guys.
Thanks so much.
Thanks so much.
All right, the perspective I have on this, Jim, is that it's 10, 15 years too late. I think commercial radio 10 or 15 years ago was the 800-pound gorilla in the room. You could not avoid it. But I think a lot of independent musicians, independent labels, have found a way to go around the big gorilla.
Absolutely.
And figure out a way to get their music out there through the internet and other means.
Internet radio, satellite radio, just on the web. Greg, we also wanted to get the perspective from the indie labels themselves. So we talked to several people at some of the most respected indies in the country to hear what they have to say about the settlement.
I'm Jim Powers, and I'm the owner of Minty Fresh Records in Chicago. I mean, I don't think that, you know, any change is really going to be so much due to any governmental efforts or settlements as much as just larger market forces such as digital distribution, the fact that, you know, you can now reach people that are genuinely interested in your music and not try and go for those kind of lowest common denominator means of exposure, which is what, you know, commercial radio really is. So I don't see that changing per se, but I think it becomes less relevant, and I'm more hopeful than I ever have been in terms of getting exposure for new music.
It's Bettina Richards, and I work at Thrill Jockey Records. It's something that I see a glimmer of opportunity in, but I wouldn't say I'm changing how I approach radio drastically because of it. Because independent really describes not a type of music, but a distribution system. It encompasses such a wide variety of music that I think commercial radio is valuable to definitely certain segments of the independent sector. But for what many labels do, and if you're thinking of more indie rock, I think it's hard to compete with the exposure that the internet gives you.
This is Peter Gordon. I'm the CEO and founder of Thirsty Ear Recordings. The independent community, these are the mom and pops of the music world. And this is a chance for them to be able to be exposed to a broader audience. And lo and behold, maybe they're going to hold up just as well as the latest hit band. You know, the listener is interesting because the listener only knows whether they like it or they don't like it. They don't know if there's a push behind it or a major label or an indie promoter or what the gatekeepers are. They just go, yeah, that's good or that sucks. We're looking at this as a positive step forward. I think you can look at it as like, you know, who cares? Systems are embedded. No matter what you do, it doesn't really matter. We're saying no, that people are subject to change. We have an industry that we know is in crisis on all levels, and we need to look for ways of coming together, banding together, and fight the good fight. And this is an excellent example of maybe it's strange bedfellows, but here we are. So let's go do it.
Greg, that's the perspective from the indie label side of things. Me, I'm skeptical. I'm glad we got this news on shutting down Payola, but I think it's going to just come back if we're all just plugging our brains into the USB port and downloading stuff. It's still going to – somebody's going to find a way to pay somebody off as far as what we get to download.
Yep. Payola is the cockroach of the music industry. It always comes back. You cannot kill it.
I tell you, little buddy, this whole island is bewitched.
Remember, we were shipwrecked together.
Each week, as you know, Jim and I take turns picking a Desert Island Jukebox record, a record we cannot live without. And Jim, it's very much of the moment. It's not a record for all time, necessarily, the greatest record we've ever heard. It's a record we love that day, and we can't get it out of our head, and we want to take it somewhere with us and play it all day.
Well, I don't know if I'd define it that way. I'd say that this is a record that we would go to the mattresses saying, this is a classic you can
absolutely
never live. But we don't want to limit ourselves to only, you know, the one song. It's the song for that day, because our jukebox would have, you know, a couple 10,000 some odd tracks. And every musician we've ever talked to is the same way. I mean, this is an old game. It's been played on the BBC. There's a great book of rock criticism called Stranded that does this game. So when we have artists that we admire in the studio, we generally end the interview by asking them what track they would bring to the desert island. And like us, I think the best answers are, this is on my mind right now because I'm thinking about this, and this is how this music plays into that. So over the course of this special Desert Island Jukebox retrospective, we're going to hear from some of the best artists we've had on Sound Opinions, our favorite guests.
Absolutely, Jim. We've got Julian Casablancas of The Strokes, Robin Hitchcock with Peter Buck and Scott McCoy of REM, Lupe Fiasco, and super producer John Bryan, among others.
But let's start with one of the most important bands of this generation. I don't think I'm overstating it. Radiohead.
You can keep what you want. I want none of it.
When Tom York was touring America behind his solo album, The Eraser, last June, he and Johnny Greenwood, the guitarist from Radiohead, came in to see us.
We had to get some selections from these guys, and they did not disappoint us. Definitely not conventional picks.
You know, we do this thing, but it's only with people we really like, and we like you guys. Where we
doesn't involve nudity, does it?
Yeah, no, that's true. You're behind the panel, you get nude. Where we do a Desert Island Jukebox selection, where we either of us pick a song that on this particular week we couldn't, at this particular moment we couldn't live without. You have to play rock critic for a minute.
Crumbs. Scott Walker.
Oh, the new one or classic?
No, 3 and 4 at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm feeling a bit lost, put Scott's voice in my head.
See, Americans, Tom, I think completely still to this day haven't caught on with Scott Walker, even beyond. Like,
but anybody,
so give us the thumbnail. Why Scott Walker?
Anybody's into Radiohead, it's like, well, I'm sorry, part of the equation is Scott Walker.
Mm-hmm.
You know. It's just part of where we come from, isn't it?
So far ahead of his time in so many ways. You know, soul,
I could see
psychedelia,
that.
Pop. I mean,
the orchestration and stuff like that.
Yeah. Impossible to categorize, really.
Mm-hmm. The orchestration, especially at the moment, is just driving me crazy. And the fact that they used to do so many of the recordings, you know, where he'd sing it live with the orchestra, and you can hear everything coming down the vocal mic, you know, and when you put that in your headphones, it's just absolutely extraordinary sound.
How about a particular track from 3 and 4?
The Old Man's Back in Town. The Old Man's Back Again.
So here's Tom York's Desert Island Jukebox pick, The Old Man's Back Again, from Scott Walker.
I've seen a hand, I've seen a vision. It was reaching through the clouds to risk a dream. A shadow crossed the sky and it crushed it to the ground,
just like a beast. The old man's back again. The old man's back again. I seen a woman standing in the snow. She was silent as she watched them take her man. Teardrops burned her cheeks, for she thought she'd heard the shadow had left this land. The old man's back again.
That was Thom Yorke's DIJ pick. Then we asked his Radiohead bandmate, Johnny Greenwood, for his pick.
What about you, Johnny?
This afternoon I was listening to my favorite Sonic Youth album, Goo.
Oh, yeah.
Ah.
So Cool Thing or something would be great.
That's a great song. And Chuck D comes in the middle. And
yeah.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Goo came out at an exciting time because... Sonic Youth, you know, suddenly they were this underground band, and suddenly their video was on MTV.
Geffen. Yeah, that whole Geffen thing.
Was that one of your one of the things that inspired you guitar-wise?
I think song and music-wise, yeah. You kind of don't think of it as playing guitars. It's just a feeling it gives you. It's like a Christmas present from my brother, actually, when I was 16, when it came out. I just thought it was amazing. Still do.
That's Johnny Greenwood's Desert Island Jukebox pick, Cool Thing by Sonic Youth. I'm with him on that. One of their best songs.
We'll be right back on Sound Opinions from Chicago Public Radio and American Public Media with more of our DIJ special, including picks from REM's Peter Buck and Lupe Fiasco.
Now you know you should look pretty. Rather be just a little faster.
This is Sound Opinions from Chicago Public Radio and American Public Media, and you're listening to a special guest Desert Island Jukebox show.
Pumping it in through a spiky black fist. If she don't kiss you, you'll never be kissed. Olay, tarantula.
Greg, when it comes to knowing rock history, there are a few guests who've come in here who could keep pace with us, like Robin Hitchcock, Peter Buck, and Scott McCoy. They all came in together when they were touring. These are guys who grew up collecting records obsessively. They still go out and scour record bins for old, you know, 12-inch vinyl records. They would have been rock critics, is the truth, if they hadn't become musicians.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was evidenced by Robin Hitchcock. I mean, I think there's three levels to these answers, Jim. I mean, there's the surface-level answer. It's kind of obvious. Then there's the artist who goes a little bit deeper, and you go, wow, that's pretty impressive knowledge of music. And then there's Robin Hitchcock, who's got that third layer, that sort of surreal, subterrestrial level, and you go, wow.
So you'll hear Robin's bizarre pick, and then those of Scott McCoy and Peter Buck.
If it was a song that I'd heard before, what would I take? I don't know that I'd want anything I'd heard before, actually. I might take something I didn't know about.
You're going to be difficult, huh? Okay.
I might take sort of the complete works of Dvorak, and I would, in my last moments as a listening person, develop a new experience, you know, because otherwise I'd just take stuff I know by heart, like Revolver, and, you know.
Right.
I mean, I could drop the needle on Revolver and just play it to myself without actually having it in the room, and, you know, I'd know exactly when it finished. So do I need it? I don't know.
Right, so it brings some new listening.
Yeah, yeah.
I like that idea. I think that's the first person ever said that.
Yeah, something that you've never heard before. Right, there you go.
Well,
yeah.
That's what you say. You know, it's time to get out of the rock critic business if you don't believe that the best band in the universe right now is forming in Schaumburg next week.
Is the next one. Right, exactly. Although I do like the concept of you sitting on the desert island and playing note for note Revolver in your head without it actually being there. I think that's kind of a cool idea,
I don't think
too.
I wouldn't be the only person that could do it.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing.
It's also the answer to why there's electricity on the island. There is no electricity. You know, which solves any multitude of problems.
Right. All right, Scott, you're going to have to top Robin's answer. That was pretty good.
Oh, boy. I don't know. How about Walking in the Rain by the Ronettes? I could listen to that forever.
That's pretty cool.
I could never get sick of that.
The drama, the pathos. Is
that Walking in the Rain with the one I love or my mind? How does it go?
With the one I love.
Yeah, walking in the rain, wishing a star up above and being so in love.
Yeah.
I recognize that voice.
It's got that Hal Blaine drum beat, too. Pretty awesome stuff. The Ronettes, pretty amazing.
I was going to say So Much Wine by the Handsome Family, but then Walking in the Rain popped into my head in the instant.
What about you, Peter?
Well, I was thinking about it, and there's a song that I've listened to for probably 30 years now, and it never ceases to mystify me. So if it's mystified me for 30, it can probably last. It's a song by Dion, from Dion the Belmonts, the B-side of Abraham, Martin, and John, and it's a studio jam with him singing called Daddy Roland. And it's, if they have a Delta on Mars, this is the kind of blues they'd be playing there. It's It's you could tell it's made up in the studio because half the band thinks their chord changes and the other half doesn't. So like two of the guys just stay on the A and the other guys wander up to the D and the E. And he just improvises these kind of blues lyrics over the top, but he kind of wails them. It's one of the most amazing pieces of music I've ever heard.
Wow.
It's on this Dion box set now, but for years and years, it was only available as the B-side of Abraham, Martin, and John. So every time I'd see that record in the thrift store for a dime, I'd buy it and give it to someone. I gave it to Scott. I gave it to Scott Litt. I gave it to Pat McCarthy. Yeah. Robin, I may have given you one. I've probably given away 100 copies of that single.
Yeah.
And everyone that hears it just goes, God, that's just unbelievable.
Yeah.
This is why Peter Buck would have been the greatest rock critic.
He wanted to make a legitimate living.
Between, Lester Bangs and the two of us, if he'd actually become a rock critic.
The reason that I could not be a rock critic is because you quite often have to listen to music you don't like, and to me that is just torture. It's one of the reasons I don't go to dinner parties, because someone else has control of the stereo.
Yeah.
It's like, first of all, they're cooking for me, and then I got to deal with that. And then on top of everything else, they always play something that I just have to... only a really dumb person would play this record. I just can't say that. It's a physical sensation. I mean, really bad music it makes me really pissed off and in a way that just almost nothing else other than, like, traffic and root canal work does.
That's Peter Buck's Desert Island Jukebox pick. He's going to the Tropical Island, Greg, with Daddy Rollin' in Your Arms by Dion. Before that, Scott McCoy gave us Walking in the Rain by the Ronettes. And Robin Hitchcock is, listening to the voices in his head, which happened to be playing Revolver by the Beatles.
You're listening to Sound Opinions from Chicago Public Radio and American Public Media, and we're letting some other people play Rock Critic today. It's a special Desert Island Jukebox pick show filled with selections of some of our favorite musical guests.
What up, y'all? Y'all ain't know, I go by the name of Lupe Fiasco, representing that first and 15.
Next up, Jim, we have an artist who made one of the great debut albums of 2006, Lupe Fiasco's Food and Liquor. Lupe Fiasco, a.k.a. Muhammad Wasilu Jaco, a man of wide-ranging taste. Hip-hop artist for sure, but kind of a mind-blowing choice for a Desert Island Jukebox pick.
Oh, absolutely. When Lupe came here in September, his Desert Island Jukebox pick completely came from Mars.
If I was going to a desert island on a nice yacht stocked with all of the fine meats and cheeses from around the world, and I had to take one song, I would take Johnny Cash. Who else is on that? Chris Christopherson, Waylon Jennings, and what's the other guy? The one who smokes all the weed.
Willie Nelson.
Willie Nelson. I do Highwayman.
Yeah.
Wow. Why?
I love Johnny Cash for some reason. I love everything about him.
So the song "The Highwayman,"
yeah,
"The Highwayman" by The Highwayman. Yeah. I know what you're. Yeah,
I would do that. I would play that.
When did you hear that song? When did you first hear that song? As a kid or what?
No. I just got into my Johnny Cash era over the past like year and a half. I picked up the Rick Rubin produced Legends of Johnny Cash, and they just released Legends of Johnny Cash 2, which is whatever. But part one is amazing. And to get into his story and to understand the things that he did, and it's like his music, it speaks to me to a certain respect. The Man in Black is the reason why I wear black at all my shows now, to know why he wore all black, and he wore for the poor and the lonely old, and it keeps going on. But I just love Johnny Cash for some reason. Him and Nas, are two of the greatest storytellers. You know what I'm saying? Whether Johnny Cash wrote his own songs or not, the songs that he sung and the way they were presented was just dope.
If only Johnny hadn't died, he could have done one of those Rick Rubin records of a Nas song. I would have liked to have heard that.
Yeah, there you go.
That would have been fresh.
Hip-hop is...
Yes.
I Gave You Power. Johnny Cash doing I Gave You Power off it was written. That would be
Is
fresh.
That the one where he's impersonating a bullet?
Yeah, he's a gun.
Yeah, he's a gun. Yeah. That's awesome. That is an awesome song.
But Johnny Cash, he's got a body count on his records, too. He killed Delia.
The original gangster?
Yeah.
That's a wicked song. The original, original gangster.
Yeah, but it would be the Highwayman.
Wow.
I was a highwayman. Along the coach roads I did ride, with sword and pistol by my side. Many a young maid lost her baubles to my trade. Many a soldier shed his lifeblood on my blade. The bastards hung me in the spring of 25, but I am still alive.
I fly a starship across the universe divide, and when I reach the other side, I'll find a place to rest my spirit if I can. Perhaps I may become a highwayman again, or I may simply be a single drop of rain, but I will remain. I'll be back again and again and again and again and again and again.
Yes, Lupe Fiasco choosing that song, The Highwayman, by The Highwaymen. So digging deep for a country hit from the 80s. Not the first thing you'd think of when you think of Johnny Cash, but Lupe Fiasco, as evidenced by his debut album, a man who listens to a wide variety of music and incorporates it in interesting ways.
I had a chance to sit down with Julian Casablancas of The Strokes when they came through Chicago in support of their third album in January of 2005.
Yeah, Jim, that was a good opportunity for you. I was not there. I was coaching my daughter's basketball team, which you guys both gave me grief about, but I'll forgive you for that because I was very interested.
Some of us have our priorities straight, all right?
But I was very interested to hear what Julian came up with as a Desert Island Jukebox pick.
I can only choose one song.
Yeah, right, with the proviso, you know, the provision that this is at this moment in time, you know, this is my one choice.
Oh, God. If I would probably, I don't know, it sounds cheesy, but I'd probably choose I had a dictaphone where I record, and I was in a hotel in Spain playing a show there, and there was, like, some, like, piano person.
Mm-hmm. In the
lady,
piano lounge kind of thing.
Yeah, and she was playing the Moonlight Sonata.
Hmm.
And it was like I had to walk past a party to like get to it, you know? And so I was recording and it's like, you know, celebrate good time. And then like that fades away and then it cuts into
Moonlight Sonata.
Yeah, so I just sort of recorded it just for fun. And I don't know, probably that song.
Wow. So the dictaphone recording of a lady in a Spanish bar playing Moonlight Sonata.
Mm-hmm.
Now, see, that would, you know, you're supposed to choose Iggy Pop or the Velvet Underground or Blondie. But I like that. What was it? Was it a time and place thing?
I don't know.
Do you really get off on that song?
It's really well made. It's really, it's a good piece of thing.
¶¶
Moonlight Sonata by Beethoven, Julian Casablancas never failing to amaze with a selection that goes deep, the Vladimir Horowitz version.
Yeah, I'll tell you why, Greg, why it goes so deep. You know, Julian doesn't say a lot in interviews. Sometimes it can kind of be hard to get him to open up, but he's actually making a very funny comment there. The Strokes got no end of crap from critics who reviewed their third album and pointed out that Razorblade stole from Barry Manilow's Oh Mandy.
Yeah.
It turns out that Barry Manilow got a lot of crap in his day from ripping off Moonlight Sonata by Beethoven for his song Could It Be Magic? So you know, I think Casablancas was really making a joke about how everybody steals from everything all the time and lay off me. It didn't even kick in until later on when I was thinking about why did he choose that song? In a minute on Sound Opinions from Chicago Public Radio and American Public Media, we'll have more of our special guest Desert Island Jukebox Show, hearing from producer, songwriter, soundtrack king John Bryan and the great young rapper Rhymefest.
Oh, the razor blade, wish it would snap this rope. The world is in your hand, or it's at your throat. At times it's not that complicated. Anything to forget everything. He would never talk, but he was not shy. She was a street smart girl, but she could not lie. They were perfect for each other.
Listening to Sound Opinions from Chicago Public Radio and American Public Media. We're phoning it in this week, letting other people, our guests, do the heavy lifting. People who've come by the show are picking their Desert Island Jukebox selections, and it's good fun.
Our next guest, Jim, is one of those secret weapons in the music industry, one of the great behind-the-scenes players of the last 10, 15 years, multi-instrumentalist, songwriter, arranger, producer for people like Kanye West, Amy Mann, and Fiona Apple. That's John Bryan.
Greg, he doesn't tour much, but he came to Chicago to play a big music festival last summer. While he was here, he came in, he did a taping with us in front of a live studio audience.
I always opt out of this one because I can never do it. I'm too much of a music lover.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I just all my life listening to stuff. So, I mean, even when people have gone like, you know, your top 10, it's usually like, okay, well, let's see, the complete works of Billie Holiday, the complete works of the Beatles, complete works of Bob Dylan, and complete works of Hank Williams, and just, you know,
We qualify it. What you know, if you when you leave here and you get in the cab and you have a burning desire to hear a tune right now, you know, so it's the mood of the moment. We won't even say of the day anymore.
Right,
well,
now,
you know, I gotta I have to say, for people who have not seen John do his show, it's remarkable because he'll find these avenues that you never thought you'd go down, like songs that I absolutely knew I hated. I thought there's no way I would ever want to hear this song performed by anyone. And one that springs to mind that you'd done at Largo that just completely, like, changed my mind about something was, and I'm still not sure I would ever want to hear the original, but I'd love to hear your version of it, was that Captain and Tennille song.
Oh, my God. Muskrat Love?
No, I think it was Love Will Keep Us Together, right?
It's a great song.
And it's like, he's doing Captain and Tennille,
yeah,
and he's actually making me kind of like it.
But it's great, and the lyrics totally on topic. I mean, it's actually really kind of great, and there's all this great stuff about, you know, vanity in there. Like, somebody saying that as an expression of love, like, yeah, I'm going to be around, you know, and it And by the way, you look fantastic right now, and that's not going to be the case, and you're going to lose that as a power to persuade people, and I'm still going to be here. So, you know,
yeah,
take note.
Kudos to me, right?
but it's a great melody, and I also just think it's a great record. I mean, it's one of those things. There are certain records, the first second they come on, it just has its greatness. Whether you like it or not, it's... you know, it's self-evident. And that record has a sound. It has very definitive hooks. And you can't actually... I mean, you got to give it credit. That's a very creative record. There's not another record that sounds like it. And even they didn't specifically make a bunch of things that sounded like it afterwards. That was that particular moment in time for them.
Oh, my God. John Bryan justifying his very unconventional love for Love Will Keep Us Together by Captain and Tennille.
That's wrong. It's just wrong. You know, the only good thing that can be said about the Captain and Tennille is that Tony Tennille sang Backup on the Wall by Pink Floyd. Other than that, the entire career can be dismissed.
Straight out of high school, we didn't know what to do. Wanted to go to college, but no money was nothing new. Wanted to get away, go see the world and do something new. He got approached in the mall by the army recruit. Told him, if you want to go to school, we got money too. Son up at 18, you'll be out when you're 22. He joined the army airborne, got his uniform with the boot camp. Got some discipline, I rock this when they shipping them. He's in the midst of war, bullets flying and missing him. Wishing he was a kid again with his family in Michigan.
The man you just heard from, John Bryan, has worked with the next man you're going to hear from, the rapper Rhymefest. His album Blue Collar, one of the best of last year. Here's a man who, even before his first album came out, had already won a Grammy Award. He had co-written Kanye West's Jesus Walks.
Here's Rhymefest's choice, and I think he was really happy not to pick a rap song.
The one song that I know that I never get tired of hearing is All I Do by Stevie Wonder. You set my heart on burning fire. You're coming to be my one desire. Oh, man, I'll be on that island jamming and dancing, eating coconut, drinking coconut milk. And, oh, man.
Now, what is it about that song? Just the groove, the lyrics? What is it about it that you love?
Buddy, those are the days when you could put message, lyrics, and groove together. The thing about Stevie Wonder and Marvin Gaye and that era of music is, you know, I listen to that. I listen to Robert Johnson and Nina Simone and Nat King Cole. You know, isn't it great after being out late, walking my baby back home, arm in arm over meadow and farm, walking my baby back home. We go long harmonizing a song, or I'm reciting a poem. Pals go by and they give me the eye, walking my baby back home. Like, that was lyrics. That was like you didn't have to say, I want to it in your booty, girl. In your booty, girl. in your booty. It was like, yo, you can actually like infer something and know what he's talking about. We stopped for a sec. She started to sweat. Something she slipped with her hand on my chest. She says if I try to kiss her, she'll cry. I dried her tears all through the night. I was like, yo, he like, he got her. Like, what happened to that?
That ain't like I want to ride you like my Jeep.
Yeah, that's what, yo, I would take all I do because all I do has the lyrics, and he got calm and he got hype and he's talking about something, and and she set his heart on burning fire. She's beginning to be his only one desire. If you're beginning, all that matters to me is all I do is think about. And he just he couldn't take it no more. Broke out.
You know,
that's music.
We're not having him back to rap. We're gonna have him back to be a rock critic.
I was gonna say I'm very disappointed because he's just not passionate enough about that song.
He's
so laid back about the whole thing.
That's the kind of criticism.
Now, you see what happens when you stop talking about rap and you start talking about other stuff. I'm like, yo.
Rhymefest really into that Stevie Wonder track. And one of the few people, you know, you think most people go back to those 70s Stevie Wonder records for a reference point. He goes for Hotter Than July, which was kind of after the golden era of Stevie Wonder.
This is Sound Opinions from Chicago Public Radio and American Public Media, and you're listening to a special guest Desert Island Jukebox show.
Remember Geez Louise and all the bedrooms. Window screens thrown away for our teenage dream.
Greg, when the wonderful psychedelic pop band Granddaddy ended, Jason Lytle continued to make some great music on his own. We're wishing him luck in his solo career. He came by here and he chatted with us and he played for us, and then we asked him about his Desert Island Jukebox pick.
Yeah, it was a very interesting choice. There was synergy in the room that day, Jim, because you and I had just talked about this band. We loved the new music that they were putting out, and Jason Lytle, lo and behold, was on the same page with us.
I would take a song called Roscoe by a band called Midlake.
Good answer. Yes.
Yes.
Yes. We're big Midlake fans. I just planted the seed to have them
I
come on
love,
the show.
As
love
you
that
should
album.
Be.
Yeah. Love that album.
Denton, Texas, kind of psychedelic, swirling.
Amazing. Okay, tell us why.
Yeah.
Well, it goes back to that feeling thing. I think that they've done a really good job at sort of creating worlds within a world and creating feelings, and that song's a really good I don't know, I'm the chugging rhythm thing I'm a big fan of.
Mm-hmm.
And the lyrics are just strange enough but just at home enough, and all the instrumentation, it's I think when I needed to get out of my mind, there would be enough elements in that song to do it. But when I needed to feel at home enough, there's enough elements as well. And I think they coexist like pretty well within that song.
Yeah.
Well, wow, we've been stumbling on how to describe that record. I think there's also...
We'll let him be the rock critic.
You can do some rock criticking now, too, that you're free of Granddaddy.
I put that record on. I had no idea what they sounded like, who they were. I just put it on, and that first song... I think Roscoe's like right up there, maybe the first song on the record, right? And was just like, wow, it's beautiful. It was like this dusky... I don't know. I kept bringing up like Christine McVie, Fleetwood Mac, kind of early 70s kind of... You know, vibe. I don't know.
But crossed with My Bloody Valentine.
Well,
that's,
you know,
the thing.
Yeah,
it's great.
That too.
Yeah. Well, it's even the I don't know. The album before that is actually really, really good, and I kind of like it a little bit more right now. But the production on the one that we're referring to right now is kind of giving it that sort of indie rock Christopher Cross thing.
Wow. Denton, Texas band Midlake with a song called Roscoe, a tune I think all of us would consider taking to the desert island. You, me,
yeah.
Greg, and Jason Lytle.
During the show, you heard a lot of live music from these guests that they played for us in the studio. You can go to our website to hear all of those performances as well as the entire interviews at soundopinions.org.
What do we have next week on the show, Greg?
Jim, another exciting extravaganza for you, because we're going to be reviewing a bunch of new albums, including the new ones from LCD Sound System and Modest Mouse.
Got some thank yous to say on the way out. As always, Sound Opinions is produced by Todd Bachman, Matt Spiegel, Jason Saldana, and Robin Lynn. Many of our guests were recorded by Mary Gaffney. And Tori Malatia, our fearless leader here at Chicago Public Radio, is a man I wouldn't mind being stranded with on the desert island, but only if he wore the grass skirt and the coconut bra. In case you missed any of our recent shows, here are some of the albums we've reviewed on Sound Opinions.
Invisible like all the reeds, dark and cold like all the seas. Things are not as you would have them. I'm no man and you're no one.
That is a song with a very long title. Mama, Won't You Keep Them Castles in the Air and Burning, from the second album by Clap Your Hands Say Yeah. Some Loud Thunder is the name of the disc.
I guess I hope to see you sometime, though our past will never intertwine. Again, I hope you notice I'm no hare and you're no tortoise.
They haven't made I think the beginning to end great album that they might have in them. I think if you put the best moments of the first album together with the best moments
you'd
of
have
this
a great record,
record, you have a great record.
So we rate things on the buy it, burn it, trash it scale. I have to say, this is a burn it record for those good moments. The rest are skippable.
Yeah, I would agree. A burn it record all the way. Some really, really great moments and some really, really
bad
unlistenable
ones.
And I'm touched by the same sad feeling of dread. That's Thriller from the new Fall Out Boy record, Infinity on High, one of several songs I'm sure you're never going to be able to escape for about the next year. I admire this band, Jim. I have to say, I admire the way they've gone about their business. They are clearly ambitious.
Can you say that again? Because I've been fighting with you about Fall Out Boy for years.
I don't think they pull it off. They sound like everyone but themselves. I don't think there's a real personality underneath this band. I think that's what it's lacking. I think it's a big, well-done, craftsmanlike product.
To be clear, this is bubblegum music. But it's exceptionally smart bubblegum music. On the one hand, you're saying they're not doing anything ambitious. On the other hand, you're saying they're doing a new romantic song as punk pop. That's ambitious.
I recommend that people
buy it,
buy this
record. Burn it, trash it is how we rate things. This is a buy it album. I really think that this is a good, stupid, fun punk pop record.
I cannot go there. I think there's a few nice singles on here that are worth burning, but it is definitely not a buy it record. I think it's a burn it at best.
Call in the car crash hearts, cry on the couch, all the poets come to life. Fix me in 45.
On Sound Opinions, everyone's a critic. Now it's time to hear what you have to say.
New messages.
Hi, this is Nick from Boston, and this is my Sound Opinion. I wanted to give a shout-out to you guys on this, the February 16th show featuring Rocket to Russia. It is one of the greatest albums of all time. One of the things that I love about it so much is also the artwork by Punk Magazine creator John Holmstrom. The illustrations are hilarious, and they just fit in perfectly with the spirit of the album. And I just wanted to comment on that. Thanks very much. Bye.
Hello, gentlemen. This is Jeannie from Chicago, and I was so dismayed to hear you refer to some of the best whistling on an album since John Lennon. Now, I'll give John Lennon plenty of props for being John Lennon, but I think you've forgotten about Mr. Andrew Bird from our very own Chicago, who I can't imagine possibly being topped when it comes to whistling on a recent album. Thanks.
Played out on a bath mat, 6 miles north of South Bend. He just wants his life back. What's in that paper knapsack?
To give us your opinion on Sound Opinions, call our hotline, 1-888-859-1800. We'll be back next week with Sound Opinions from Chicago Public Radio and American Public Media.